For the summer's third Carte Blanche concert, the festival's artistic directors, cellist David Finkel and pianist Wu Han, will perform the complete cycle of five sonatas for piano and cello of Ludwig van Beethoven. Here's David.
Cellists are very, very fortunate to have these five Beethoven sonatas in our literature. We have a great literature. A lot of the great romantic piano composers wrote for our instrument, but Beethoven was really the first who gave us five significant works for cello and piano. They're the first sonatas where the cello and the accompanying instrument, or what used to be the accompanying instrument, are really considered as equals, and they're written with all the integrity, excitement, and depth of Beethoven's greatest compositions. He began writing them rather early in his career, even before he was into the great symphonies and the great piano concertos that would make him really famous. They come even before his very first string quartets. So these pieces were looked at initially as career opportunities. He wrote the first two sonatas for a concert tour that took him all the way up to Berlin. And it was to be his only significant concert tour, but they played a very important part in his early career thinking, because he wrote them for King Frederick William II of Prussia, who was an amateur cellist and who had in his orchestra a great cellist, Jean-Louis Duport, who premiered these sonatas with Beethoven in a single evening. And then he left some time and waited until his very, very incredible, intense, and prolific middle period to write another cello sonata, a single sonata, the A major, opus 69. And this comes in the middle of a period of composition that really knows no parallel from any other composer. If you think of these works in the middle of Beethoven's life, like the Fifth Symphony, I mean, these were his greatest hits in some ways. These were his home runs, every single one. And the Opus 69 Sonata falls right in the middle of that period. It's a great heroic work in the style of these great heroic pieces of the time. And then in 1815, as he was heading into his later years, which would find him writing works of almost transcendental quality, really for an age of the future, he gave us a little foreshadowing of that style in these two cello sonatas that he wrote in the summertime as a gift to the Princess Erdödy. And she was a very gifted pianist and actually played them at the premiere, which was in her summer palace. And these works look ahead to Beethoven's last years. He lived until 1827, so he had a little ways to go, but he had all the late string quartets, the late piano sonatas, the Missa Solemnis, great, great works still ahead of him, but these two sonatas are kind of a foreshadowing. So we have in these five sonatas a complete Beethoven cycle, as it were. And when we say Beethoven cycle, it's meant to be works that demonstrate each of his three major compositional styles, commonly known as early, middle, and late. Imagining this scene in a crowded, fancy palace in Berlin, where the famous Beethoven was to come out with a cellist and introduce himself to an audience of possibly very distracted royalty. It's quite a novelty that he begins not with a bang, but with a kind of a whisper, this very first sonata. And he must have quieted the room down by simply drawing people in. Literally everything that happens within the first four or five measures of this sonata is a surprise. There are silences, there are unexpected rhythms, unexpected interval skips, and it was as if Beethoven was telling a kind of a riddle that everyone was then expected to solve. And sure enough, within a few bars, the music settles into a very calm F major, and we have something that's a little bit like an improvisation for many bars before the next sonata Allegro movement really begins, which is very spirited and full of virtuosic passages for both cello and piano. The sonata concludes in a similar fashion with an even more virtuosic finale. These two sonatas were to be presented as a pair. The interesting thing that happens in the second of them is that it begins in a way very dissimilar to the way the first one began. You remember I said the first one began almost with a whisper. Well, the second one begins with a bang, and it begins with a bang in a minor key, in G minor. I can almost imagine, I've thought of this several times, I can imagine the audience applauding quite enthusiastically after the brilliant conclusion of the first sonata, and I can imagine Beethoven, in the middle of the applause, banging this G minor chord as if to shock everybody into silence and going on with the mysterioso opening of the second sonata. It's such a plausible scenario, especially knowing Beethoven's penchant for wanting to shock and to trick his audiences. I have a feeling that's the way it really happened. In any case, it feels like that when you play it in sequence in this cycle, as we have many times, that the shock of the opening of the second sonata, it's as if he's saying, I'm also another kind of person than I was in this first sonata. I'm also can be really serious and even a little scary. And the G minor sonata continues in a very stormy mode all the way through its first long first movement. But then the fun breaks back in the finale, and we once again have something that was meant, I think, to close off this concert party that he gave in Berlin with a real happy demonstration of brilliance and talent and creativity that must have left a very, very strong mark in that city for Beethoven. The A major sonata, the one written in Beethoven's so-called heroic period, is a very, very different kind of music. It begins this time with the cello alone, which is a revolutionary idea. And the cello plays a melody which is very extended, and it's so extended that the cello can't even quite finish it by itself. It has to have the help of the piano to complete this very long sentence. Beethoven at this time was into long phrases and long ideas. For example, the first movement of his Opus 59 string quartet, the Razumovsky Quartet in F major, begins also with a cello solo, which goes halfway and is then continued by the first violin, almost as though the cello either runs out of steam or runs out of register to complete this soaring melody, which goes way up high into the violin register. The same thing happens with this cello sonata, where the piano takes it all the way from a low C sharp on the cello, which is down here. The piano takes it all the way up to here. So that's quite a melodic gap. And the sonata goes on in this grand style, where the music has become not so much about Beethoven himself trying to call attention to his virtuosity. This is now virtuosity for the sake of the music itself. When the music becomes fast, when there are many notes, it's to convey inner excitement and inspiration rather than to impress. Cello writing is gorgeous. It uses all the greatest registers of the cello. The piano writing complements the cello beautifully. There are never problems with balance or anything. It's just a completely brilliant work. And we're all sorry that during this great period of his composition that he only wrote one of them. But we were lucky again in 1815 to get these two late, what we call the late sonatas. And the beginning of the first, which is in C major, is as different from anything that came before as you can imagine. It is a kind of ethereal quality that pervades this first movement, where the lines between the right hand and the left hand of the piano and the cello are intertwined so evenly and so intricately that it puts a kind of spell over the room. It certainly puts a spell over us as performers. As soon as you begin to play this piece, you yourself are transformed as a musician. And in true Beethoven style, after he's set up such a heavenly atmosphere in the room, he unexpectedly breaks it with one of the most violent, terse, and uncompromising movements for the duo in this concert. That I can compare this movement to is the Opus 95 Serioso String Quartet, which is also very short and very compressed and contains all the standard elements of a sonata form movement, but compressed into something under 3 minutes. Well, this movement lasts a little longer than that, but it has that same breathless quality. The transitions are gone. Beethoven literally jumps from one idea to another with no explanation or apology. Thereupon follows another very, very heavenly movement, which is similar to what Beethoven's improvisations must have been like. And people have written about his improvisational abilities. Apparently, he was amazing at sitting down at the piano and just playing off the top of his head for a room full of people. He could make them laugh. He could make them cry. He could scare them. He could enchant them. And this little movement in the middle of the C major sonata is very much as though Beethoven is sitting there with his mind wandering, his fingers wandering over the keys, one thought coming after another, and weaving a really beautiful and dramatic tapestry of sound that leads to the finale of this sonata. The finale is also a very contrapuntal movement, meaning there are many lines going simultaneously, like the first movement, but it's a kind of jolly rondo-type movement that really sounds like one of the most excited movements of the classical style, like a Mozart or Haydn movement. It's brilliant and very, very difficult for both instruments. And then as the second of these two sonatas, and I really firmly believe that Beethoven knew that it was going to be his last cello sonata, he does two extraordinary things. One, he gives us a first movement that is very much in his late style. It is very almost random in its musicality. Everything makes sense, but it's a stream of consciousness exercise where it's almost as though he looked around his composition table and picked up one idea and said, I'll put this here, and well, maybe I'll take this one and I'll put it here, as though they were cut up into little pieces of paper and reorganized. Of course, it makes so much sense to us as interpreters, but for the audience to hear it for the first time, it may seem kind of strange. And the reaction to these sonatas, critically, when they were first performed, was that people knew it was great music, but they didn't really understand it. And there was a confession at the time by musicologists that this was probably music for the future. And they were right. It's music for now, and it's music for our future as well. The next thing that happens in the sonata that's extraordinary is a full slow movement, and we have not had a full proper slow movement yet in the five sonatas. He chose for the idea of this movement very much a kind of funeral march. And I don't know what he had to be so sad about right at this point in his life. He was a little bit under stress in this juncture of his life. He was between his middle and late periods, but he was not in a totally tragic mood. But this came kind of out of nowhere. And it's really one of the most touching, beautiful, somber, and haunting movements of Beethoven that I know. And when things die down almost to nothing, all of a sudden Beethoven comes up with the idea of a fugue. and not just any fugue, a real grand fugue in the style of his Große Fuge for string quartet. This is a real piece of craziness. In the first place, it's unbelievably difficult for the piano. It could easily have been transcribed for two pianists to play. There's so many notes in it. There are sections of it that sound so modern and so dissonant that you would swear it was written in the 20th century. Yet, once again, it all makes sense when you put it together, and with this movement, Beethoven found a way to totally synthesize the cello with the piano. If you think about a fugue, every voice is equal, every voice is important. So he went from the sonatas of 1796 to still the cello kind of in a solo role and the piano accompanying or vice versa to this late and last movement where the two instruments have become totally equal partners. And after this, he probably looked at it and said, I'm done with the genre of cello and piano, but wow, are we fortunate that he was that interested in it, that he loved the cello and that he was friends with cellists for whom he wrote these great pieces. And we look very, very much forward to presenting this whole cycle for the Music at Menlo audience.